This hearing, the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will now come to order. Today is Tuesday, March 10th, and the time is 3:30 p.m. We're in Butchervitz, Room 205. Members present are Senator Myers, Senator Tobin, Senator Giesel, and myself, Senator Dunbar. We expect Senator Klayman around shortly. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Before we begin, I would like to thank Mary Gwen Kawakami, the Senate Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and Jude Augustine from the Juno LAO for staffing the committee today. We have three items on our agenda this afternoon. First, we will have two items packed before the committee, HGR 32, Rural Health Transformation Program, and SB 187, School Nutrition Meal Prohibit Food Dyes. Then we will have an introductory hearing for SB 261 and the housed youth adults IDs, birth certificates, young adults, excuse me. So first up is HJR 32, Rural Health Transformation Program. The last time this resolution was before the committee, we heard from the sponsor. Today we plan to take public testimony and look to the will of the committee. An amendment deadline was set for Monday, April 13th at 5 p.m. My office received no amendments. Here to give brief remarks on the resolution, we have Lori Wing-Hire, Legislative Healthcare Liaison. Ms. Wing-Hire, if you could please come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lori Wing-Hire. I'm the healthcare liaison for the Alaska State Legislature. Before you, you have HJR 32, which was written to express our, and I'm talking as the legislature and hope that they agree, but to express our concern with the tight timeframes and some of the inflexibility that surrounds the Rural Health Transformation Program. It's been drafted, I think, fairly broad, but has not gotten into specifics of what the bill is, and we're hoping that our congressional delegation and the governor will work with the Department of Health and with the legislature in seeing what amendments we can get or what where we can get time extended, or they can address some of the concerns that we've had, such as infrastructure building.
Thank you, Ms. Wing-Hire. Are there any questions for Ms. Wing-Hire? Not seeing any. Okay. At this time, we are going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on this item? Not seeing anyone. There's sort of a odd grayed out person online. Is that a person? No. Okay. So there is no one online. So at this time, I'll close public testimony. Are there any final thoughts or comments before we look to the will of the committee? Seeing none, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Joint Resolution 32, version 34, LS1498-I from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any necessary conforming changes.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, HJR 32 version I moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next up, we have SB 187, School Nutrition Meal Prohibit Food Dyes, before the committee for its second hearing. Last time the bill was before this committee, we heard from the bill sponsor and took invited testimony. Today, we plan to take public testimony and look at the will of the committee. Amendment deadline was set for Monday, April 13th at 5. My office received no amendments. Here to give brief remarks and a recap on the bill, we have Senator Wilikowski and Phoebe Pepper, staff to Senator Wilikowski. Please put yourself on the record and give us any remarks you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage. Appreciate you bringing this matter up again. I have no additional comments to what we've already stated last time.
Yeah, thank you. Legislative intern to Senator Wilikowski, Phoebe Pepper, for the record. I would just end our comments with something that Vice Chair Giesel noted in the last hearing, and that's that this can only do good for students in the state. For the least affected students, this just makes their meals a lot more nutritious. And for the most affected, with like students who are allergic to food dyes or students with ADHD and autism, this can make a significant impact in their ability to learn in the space. And I would like to just mention on top of that, as class sizes grow, it only takes one student who has heightened inability to focus that has been studied through these food dyes to disrupt an entire class. And it's really important for us to start to consider that with the health and in terms of what we're providing to our students and how we can make the education environment just a little bit better for them.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Pepper. Any questions before we open up public testimony? Seeing none, public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on this item? I don't see anyone. I don't see anyone online. Okay, I'm going to close public testimony. Any closing remarks before we move the bill? Seeing none, Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 187, version 34LS0846/N from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Legislative legal has the authority to make any necessary conforming changes.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, SB 187 version N moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork.
Thank you, guys.
Back on the record, finally, we will have an initial hearing today on SB 261, Unhoused Young Adults, Identification Cards, and Birth Certificates. SB 261 is sponsored by Senator Gray Jackson and relates to removing financial and bureaucratic barriers for unhoused youth to obtain identification documents. Today, we'll hear from the bill sponsor along with invited testimony. Here to introduce the bill, we have Senator Gray Jackson, LB Gray Jackson, and Jamie Bagley, staff to Senator Gray Jackson. Also available for questions, we have Lauren Whiteside from the Department of Administration, DMV, and Abigail Newby-Q, State of Alaska Registrar, Bureau of Vital Statistics. Senator Gray Jackson, if you and your staff could please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members for hearing this bill today. Senator L.B. Gray Jackson, representing District G in Anchorage. This legislation is the work of the House sponsor and I did last interim, where we both attended the National Conference of State Legislators Youth Homelessness Working Group that focused on reducing barriers for unhoused youth. Through that work, we gained insight from legislators across the country on effective approaches to addressing these challenges, which helped shape this bill. Senate Bill 261 addresses a critical gap that unhoused youth, young adults in Alaska are currently facing by helping them gain access to essential identification documents. For many young people experiencing housing instability, obtaining a birth certificate or a state ID can be a significant barrier to securing employment, accessing services, or pursuing education. This bill removes those financial and bureaucratic barriers by allowing the state to waive the fees and expanding acceptable forms of identification for individuals between the ages of 18 and 25 who are unhoused. Additionally, the bill provides flexibility in how an address may be listed, recognizing that many of these young adults don't have a permanent residence, but they still need a reliable way to receive services and documentation. Ultimately, Senate Bill 261 creates a practical and compassionate pathway for young unhoused Alaskans to obtain identification that they need to build stability and transition successfully into adulthood. With that, if it's the will of the committee, I'd be happy to have my legislative aide go through the sectional analysis, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ray Jackson. Thank you. Are there any questions before we do that? I don't see any. Yes, if you would. Ms. Bagley, please walk us through a sectional.
Thank you, Chair Dunbar and members of the committee. For the record, Jamie Bagley, staff to Senator Gray Jackson. For the sectional analysis, in Section 1, it amends AS 18.50.320, which is a conforming change related to the creation of a new subsection, Subsection B, in Section 2. In Section 2, it adds a new subsection to AS 18.50.320. Subsection B establishes an alternative method for verifying identity when requesting a certified copy of a birth certificate if the applicant qualifies for a fee waiver under AS 18.50.330, subsection C. Acceptable proof of identity may include an expired or unexpired government-issued photo identification, two supporting documents such as school records, education or medical records, or an affidavit attesting to the applicant's identity or other forms of proof of identity accepted by the Bureau of Vital Statistics. In Section 3, it adds a new subsection to AS 18.50.330, subsection C, which prohibits the state register from charging a fee for a certified copy of a birth certificate to an individual who is unhoused in between the ages of 18 and 25. The section also authorized the Department of Health to prescribe a form for verifying a person's unhoused status. In Section 4, it amends AS 18.65.310, subsection C. It adds unhoused status among the offenses for which a person may be charged with a misdemeanor when knowingly making a false written statement in an application for a state identification card. In Section 5, it repeals and reacts AS 18.65.310, subsection G. It states, in addition to individuals age 60 or older, the section allows individuals who are unhoused in between the ages of 18 and 25 to receive a non-federally compliant identification card without charge. In Section 6, it adds new subsections S and T to AS 18.65.310. Subsection S allows to verify their unhoused status using written verification on a form prescribed by the Department of Administration. And in Subsection T, creates a new procedure specific to state identification cards issued to unhoused youth. It allows these identification cards to list an address that is not a principal residence, such as a location where the person is frequently located or the address of a service organization that provides services to unhoused individuals. It also expands alternative forms of acceptable proof of identity, including expired identification, school or medical records, affidavits, or other documentation approved by regulation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bagley. We have two people for invited testimony. Does anyone have questions before we do that? Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for that sectional analysis. I'm just looking at Section 2, and I noticed that there is not a specific call out for a Bureau of Indian Affairs identification card or a tribal ID. Is there a particular reason why those types of documents might be omitted, or would those also fall into the other documents containing requisite information?
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, Jamie Bagley, staff to Senator Gray Jackson. I don't have that information available right now, but we can follow up later with the committee.
If I can follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you, Senator Tobin. I would, you shouldn't assume, but I'm going to, that that would fall under other forms of proof of identity accepted, but we could get that confirmation back to you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Okay, we're going to go now to our invited testifiers. We'll start with Mr. Brian Wilson, Executive Director of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. I think he's in the room, so if we could swap out there real quickly. Mr. Wilson, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you. For the record, Brian Wilson, the Executive Director of the Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. The goal of our organization, has as planners and implementers of the homeless response system is to connect individuals with the appropriate housing and supportive service interventions as efficiently as possible. This means finding solutions to reduce or eliminate barriers to access of services, which can take many forms, such as prohibitive costs, restrictive admission policies, or even transportation challenges. SB 261 is one of those solutions to a problem that has long been known and frequently delays our ability to connect young people experiencing homelessness with the services that they need. Last year alone, in 2025, nearly one out of three Alaskans who received some support of homeless services were under the age of 25. For the age group that SB 261 targets, so transition age youth, that's 1,464 unique Alaskans. And that's just the youth that are in communities where homeless providers exist that can enter data into our homeless management information system. We know there are many more youth experiencing homelessness across the state. Many communities don't have any youth service providers, which makes it even more difficult for youth to receive assistance in obtaining ID. Without legal identification documents, you can't get enrolled in most federal housing programs, you can't file taxes, you can't start a job, and so on. While this bill addresses the cost of obtaining a government ID and birth certificate, what is often overlooked are the additional costs youth experiencing homelessness often incur before they even get to the DMV counter. We were just helping a youth out the other day in the Kenai Peninsula with this process. Her ID was expired. She had no birth certificate, no social security card. She had a car, but it was broken down and needed repairs that she couldn't afford. To make it to the DMV location during operating hours, she had to take time off of work, and this is someone that has zero discretionary income. So while this body can't alleviate all of those hardships, what it can do is make this process a couple percentage points easier on people who are facing what often feels like, to them, an impossible hole to crawl out of. So SB 261 does just that. It removes that last hurdle in an already stressful and complicated process young people are facing across the state. So thank you to this committee for considering this piece of legislation. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, for introducing the bill and the opportunity to testify in front of you today.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Question from Senator Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, if the bill as of right now says if you're going to go get an ID, it it would be the fee for the ID would be waived, $15 per ID. What kind of a burden would that place on your organization if, let's say, instead you were paying that fee for your clients? It sounds like in a lot of circumstances you would be going with your clients in order to sign the affidavit of identification, things like that. If your organization was paying the fee instead, what kind of burden would that give you?
Yeah, for the record, Brian Wilson, Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, through the chair. That's a great question. We do have several organizations that squabble together money to pay for those IDs. It's money that could go to provide other supports that an individual may need as well. So this is sort of a hope to level up the level of care that we can give with the existing resources that we have on hand.
Just quick follow-up. Could you give me kind of a rough estimate of how much a year you're spending then on helping folks get – or on the fee specifically to help folks get their IDs?
Yeah, for the record, Brian Wilson, through the chair. So our organization is not a direct service organization. We are a systems-based organization. So for our organization specifically, we are not providing that service, but I know many of our providers do.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. I'll note that the fiscal note provided by the DMV does state that they estimate 5,000 IDs at $15 each, $75,000 is their anticipated loss revenue. So in theory, that would be the amount of money.
I have some questions about that too when we get to that point.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, 5,000 seems like a lot. Uh-huh. We could ask that question any time of the division's manager at DMV who is online. Before we do that, why don't we go to our next, unless there's other questions for Mr. Wilson? We're going to go to our next invited testifier. That's Mr. Laverse. On Teams.
Yep, I'm here.
Hello, sir. Yes, Senior Director of Legislative Affairs at Youth Systems and Youth Systems Improvement. Let me see if I have the organization that you're with.
Covenant House.
Oh, great. That's actually not here, but that's great. Good to hear from you. We can't see you right now, but if you could speak up a little bit, we can hear you. And please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hey, for the record, my name is Josh Lauer, Senior Director of Covenant House Alaska. I'm here today to share the impact of the passage of Senate Bill 261 would have on young people experiencing homelessness. We often talk about youth homelessness as a housing issue, but it's also a systems issue. And one of the most persistent systemic barriers for a young person working to leave homelessness is the inability to get access to replacement identification. In 2025, over 300 young people who are accessing CHA services, a third of all the young people that access our services needed help getting replacement identification and documentation. Without a birth certificate or ID, young people can't get a job, they can't sign a lease, they can't access healthcare, apply for benefits, or even enroll in school in some cases. They are effectively locked out of systems designed to help them back on their feet. And for young people, especially those aging out of foster care or fleeing unsafe situations, those barriers compound quickly. By waiving fees for birth certificates and state IDs for unhoused young people, this bill would remove a financial barrier that many young people cannot overcome. When you have no stable income, even a relatively small fee can be the difference between moving forward and staying stuck. Just as importantly, this bill recognizes that traditional forms of identification are often out of reach for young people experiencing homelessness. By allowing alternative documentation, such as school records, medical records, or affidavits, this bill meets young people right where they are. In our work with young people, we see firsthand how transformative access to ID can be. A young person gets their birth certificate and suddenly they can apply for a job. They get an ID and they can open a bank account. They can apply for housing, enroll in programs, and begin to build stability. Something as small as a piece of paper becomes the key that unlocks opportunity. And the opposite is also true. Without ID, young people remain stuck in cycles of homelessness, not because they lack motivation or ability, but because the system won't let them in. Senate Bill 261 also provides flexibility around address requirements, allowing young people to use a service provider's address or a location where they can reliably receive mail. This is critical. You cannot expect someone without stable housing to provide a traditional address. The change acknowledges that reality and creates a practical solution. The impact of this bill is both immediate and long-term. Immediately, it will help young people access services, employment, and housing more quickly. Long term, it will reduce the likelihood that young people remain homeless or return to homelessness. And importantly, this is a cost-effective intervention. By removing small barriers up front, we reduce the potential of traumatic events on the street and the need for far more expensive interventions later: emergency shelter, mental health and behavioral health care, recovery services, medical care, and involvement with other public systems. In that sense, this bill is about prevention. It's about efficiency, and most importantly, it's about dignity. Every young person deserves the ability to prove who they are and get access to the opportunities that come with that. Passing Senate Bill 261 would help make that possible. Thank you for your time and for your commitment to Alaska's young people.
Thank you, Mr. Lauer. We have a question from Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Josh, for this information. I'm curious, as I am too, looking at the fiscal note from the Department of Motor Vehicles, and they make some stipulations about this particular unhoused young adult population. And I know that you have quite a bit of experience with this particular subpopulation of folks experiencing houselessness. I'd love for you to provide just some insight to the committee. The Department of Motor Vehicles postulates that there are 419 individuals who would qualify under this policy based on the 2024 HUD count. And they also suggest that each one of those 419 people would lose their ID each month. Can you talk a little bit about the folks that you serve, where they keep their vital documents, how they store them? Are these folks also couch surfing or perhaps have other types of housing vouchers or other types of services provided to them? What is kind of from your experience as an expert in this field, what is your experience with folks and their ability to maintain and hold on to important documents that are provided to them?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Tobin. I mean, I think that 400 number is pretty close. And like I said, we served about 300 young people in that needed access to ID in Anchorage, which are young people who come from all over the state. I think it really depends on the type of situation. You know, the majority of those young people wouldn't be necessarily losing those IDs, you know, monthly. It really depends on the stability that they have. And so, I mean, in the situation where they're going with a service provider with a letter of homelessness or some other thing to help them get this ID, they're probably, you know, they're engaged in services. And the likelihood that they lose that is a lot lower. You know, I think the young people who are still experiencing instability on the street, it's possible that, you know, they lose their belongings all the time. If you're camping or other things, you get moved around, or yeah, like you said, couch surfing, you get moved around. If you're fleeing an abusive situation, you may not, you know, remember to grab your ID on the way out the door. So it is a continuum, but I would say that the majority of those young people would definitely now be accessing another ID monthly, but that ID that they would get would give them a lot more opportunity, you know, to be successful and find stability.
Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Lowers? Thank you, Mr. Lowers. I don't see any. Do we have any questions for either Ms. White, Director Whiteside, I'm sorry, Divisions Manager Whiteside from the DMV, or Chief Newby Q from Division of Public Health, Vital Records? Senator Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've got a couple of questions for the DMV folks online. and this is pretty much all coming off of the fiscal note. So first of all, I'm wondering approximately how many IDs and driver's licenses the DMV creates and mails out on a regular basis, whether that's monthly or annually.
Through the chair, Senator Minor, Division Operations Manager Lauren Whiteside. Actually, in preparation for this bill, we did run the numbers for the age range of the people in that would be the number of total ID cards issued to this age range in 2025 was 10,243.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So that what I'm looking at here, the reason I'm asking is because you're talking about needing an entire new person to do this and to process all of these IDs. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you guys process quite a few IDs and driver's licenses every year. I mean, we've got, what is it, something like 500,000 adults in the state, and all of us have to get a new driver's license or ID every, 8 years. And so we're looking at, just trying to do the math in my head really quick, what is that, 80,000 or 75,000 a year roughly, and we're talking about 419 people here. So how many do you process in total, and how many people does that take of the type that you're trying to add one more here?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, that additional PCN written into the fiscal note is because every one of these IDs, whether each of the 500, you know, people get one every month or if they get one a year. In theory, all of these credentials are going to be mailed back to the DMV because in theory they are experiencing homelessness or they are unhoused. So that position is going to be needed to route all of those cards, mark all of the records, and work with the individual to claim them when in theory they would be coming in to claim those credentials from a DMV office.
So I don't have to mail anything in when I go get my driver's license. Why are we doing a whole bunch of mailing in and then mailing back just to get somebody a state ID that's not even a real ID?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, all credentials are mailed. 100% of credentials, whether it's an ID card or a driver's license, is mailed.
Yes, I understand that, but if I understood you correctly, you're talking about I'm having some folks are dropping something off at the DMV, then you're mailing it to the central location and then mailing the final ID card back. That part makes sense, but it sounds like there's some other – you're trying to say that there's more involved in the process than that.
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes. So if an unhoused individual comes in and applies for this ID card, what's going to happen is we're going to return that credential to the DMV because they don't have necessarily an address where they're receiving mail. So those cards are returned to the DMV, then our staff will have to mark all of those records, and we send emails to every individual that we get credentials returned to the division. And then we are going to work with that individual to connect them with their ID card.
Okay, this is sounding like a lot more work than it needs to be. I'll go on to another line of questioning from the fiscal note then. In the fiscal note, you've got a section here that says you're estimating 419 individuals. Okay, fine. But then you're estimating that they're going to need a new one every month. Why?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, because there is no cap written into this bill, in theory, these people could come in daily and get a new ID card. So when we were working through the fiscal note, we were trying to figure out what would be a fair estimate of what a person could be coming in to get a credential. And daily is obviously very unlikely, but monthly is possible. As the former testifier said, they are often, you know, moving quite a bit. And we, without a cap, we just did the best that we could to think of what could possibly be likely.
I have a question on this line. If you want to take a break, Senator Myers, we'll come back to this. For Senator Gray Jackson or Ms. Bagley, have other states done this? Have other states, you know, moved to make IDs like this free for unhoused individuals?
Yeah, through the chair, for the record, Jamie Bagley. There are other states that have done this. They've taken similar steps. So just a couple to name that are pretty similar are Indiana, Kentucky, New Mexico, and then there is a wide range of other states that have either it's IDs that they get or birth certificates, not both. This way we decided to do it if it best fit the needs for our state was to allow for both IDs and birth certificates.
So follow up to that, have those other, what kind of increased costs have those other states' DMVs experienced? And do other DMVs, you know, is it typical that unhoused individuals lose these IDs every month and come in every month?
Through the chair, I don't have that information on hand, but we can get back to you, the committee, with that.
That would be great to see whether or not this has been a significant amount of cost increase. Mr. Wilson, you have your hand raised. Do you want to try to answer that or speak to that a little bit? And then we'll go to you, Senator Tobin, if you have a question. If you put yourself on the record before you answer, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah, for the record, Brian Wilson, Alaska Coalition on Housing and Homelessness. To the point of the having to have a unhoused individual come back to a DMV, we have agencies that actually put their address down for that individual so it could be mailed to them and connect them with it. In addition, when we do that, we upload a copy of their identification into our homeless management information system, which is sufficient for all kinds of things except for buying, you know, alcohol, essentially. So they can write down that they'll have a copy that we can print out with their driver's license number on it. So they don't have to keep going back and back and back and back for a physical ID.
That's a good point. So once you have the ID, even if the physical ID is lost, the information mm-hmm. is stored so you can access a lot of services using that electronic.
Yes, that's correct. And actually, some of our providers have rules in place for their own like private funds that they use to cover this to say, okay, we're going to do this once in a lifetime for you. And it hasn't been an issue where somebody's had to keep coming back because of that reason. So
very good. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Senator Tobin has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question actually was to the DMV regarding Mr. Wilson's comment here in Section 6 of the bill, where it indicates that the person can put an address of the organization they may frequent, an address of a family member or another principal residence in which they have access to, in which that could be where the DMV mails this identification card. So I'm curious to hear the department and how they took that into consideration, as in her previous response, it doesn't sound like that was part of how she formulated the fiscal note.
Ms. Whiteside, did you hear the comment or the question?
I did, yes. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I've been with the division about a little more than 20 years, and I can tell you, unfortunately, the USPS, in our experience, for official government mail, if the individual's name is not on the mailing address, more often than not, they do return it to the agency. And like I said earlier, we do mark every single record, so when the credentials are returned, and then we do store them for 4 months, because our hope is to connect every person that had a return credential with that person. But in our experience, the Postal Service does not often, and I'm not saying never, but we receive thousands of return credentials every single week. So it, like I said, in our experience, it is mostly if their name is not on that mailing address, they are not going to leave that credential.
Senator Tobin.
Thank you. So, Mr. Wilson, as you have, it seems, better insight. So the organizations that do provide an ID to their clients and cover that cost for their clients and use their address as the location where the ID should be provided to, do they experience an uptick of where they don't receive this from the U.S. Postal Service?
Yeah, for the record, Brian Wilson, Last Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, through the chair. I'm not going to say that's never happened, but oftentimes our providers and our shelters will talk to the people delivering the mail to say, hey, you may get mail here with a lot of different names. It's because of this situation. So it's sort of a known thing versus someone with a piece of mail to a random house that's, you know, not registered under that name might get flagged and returned.
Very good. Follow up, Senator Tobin.
I actually have a separate question.
Go ahead, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And this is actually to the bill sponsor and potentially to Mr. Wilson. As I'm reading this, the thing that strikes me is that these identification cards could be used to register someone to vote. We know that many folks who are houseless and homeless may not have the ability to have that tool they need, which is the ID card, so that they can exercise their constitutional right to engage in the electoral process. Is it your intention that these identification cards could allow folks who are houseless and homeless to participate in electoral politics?
Sure. For the record, Brian Wilson, Last Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, through the chair. Yes, and really. It's, to me, if someone is unhoused and they wanted to participate in an election and there was a cost that was prohibitive for them to do so, the fact is they probably won't. And so whether it's applying for a job, getting a housing referral, you know, being able to participate in their civic duty, yeah, it's all of the above.
Thank you. Senator Klayman had the question, then we'll go to Senator Meyer.
I think it's for the department with their fiscal note. I think many of us have gone to the Reentry Coalition where they have this where you do this kind of simulated exercise of what it means when you suddenly are homeless and or just out of jail or in other places when you lack resources. And sometimes the greatest difficulty is getting an ID and the notion that if you're having a hard time getting an ID that you're going to go every day to the DMV to get another ID just seems like fiction on top of fiction. So I guess my question to the department on the fiscal note, is there some basis for a history of anyone coming in day after day requesting another ID and another ID? Has that ever happened in the department?
Through the chair, Senator Clayman, yes, it does happen. Yes, it has happened.
That was the same person comes in like 5 days in a row requesting an ID each time?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Senator Clayman, when individuals over the age of 60, when you reach the age of 60, you can get a free ID in the state of Alaska. And we have had individuals who have come in multiple days a week and applied for a new ID.
Any, can you give me an idea of the frequency? That is that like happening 200 or 300 times a year, or is this sort of 3 or 4 times a year that happens?
No, it's not hundreds of individuals a year, but to answer the question, yes, it does happen, and it has happened.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Clayman. Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments on some of the recent discussion so far. So to Senator Clayman's point, if a senior's coming in that often and getting a new ID, I'm wondering if, you know, first thing that goes through my mind is this person losing their ID or they just need somebody to talk to? The second point, to Senator Tobin's point, I don't want to, about voting, I don't want to, remove somebody's ability to vote, but my concern would be if we're talking about an unhoused person trying to find the correct district that somebody lives in. So, you know, if somebody's in Anchorage or Fairbanks, you know, I'm perfectly fine letting them vote in a federal election. They're you know, going to be voting for the folks from Alaska. But if you start talking about, you know, if somebody's in downtown Anchorage, you know, what's the appropriate House or Senate district for them to vote in, or the appropriate Alaska municipal or the appropriate Anchorage Assembly district to vote in, I think that starts to get a little problematic. But that's just that I think that's going to fall a little bit more in Division of Elections than DMV, but just a thought.
Well, I'm sure we've all had the experience of door knocking and you get to a building and it turns out to be maybe no other people haven't had this, and it turns out to be some kind of facility for a medical facility or a homelessness facility, and there's a bunch of people registered to vote there.
Yeah.
Many of whom don't live there anymore. And often you can't access that building. And it's like, oh, there's all these voters I can't talk to. All right. Are there other questions? Senator Tobin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just on that point, particularly in Anchorage, I would say that within my district is about 3/4 of the folks who are unhoused and homeless, particularly also Holding Covenant House, Brother Francis Shelter, mm-hmm. Gaines Cafe. And I'd be very happy if they were able to exercise their constitutional right to vote and ensure that they had a role in their electoral process.
Thank you, Senator Tobin. Okay. Senator Gray Jackson, do you have any further comments on this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank the committee again for hearing the bill this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Wilson, for being here, Mr. Lauwers. We are going to bring this bill up again, hopefully sometime soon. I'm not going to set an amendment deadline yet, though. We're going to set this aside. The next meeting of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee will be held on Thursday, April 16th. At that time, we will hold the first round of confirmation hearings for boards and commissions. Thank you, everyone, for a productive hearing. It is 4:13, and this meeting is adjourned.